70 record closing highs so far for the Dow.
Blasting through a ceiling.
In a record-setting IPO.
Investors who have been riding the wave.
When the stock market is booming, we're made to believe the economy is booming.
As the stock market goes, so goes the wealth and the health and economy.
So what exactly is the stock market measuring?
The 12th of March, 2024, 98.4 Capital FM. You know what happens every Tuesday. This is the Financial Focus, the show that delves to seek into matters affecting our economy. You are with me, Nyambura Ndongo, alongside Ken Gishinga, Chief Economist, Mentoria Economics. And Ken, we did have a guest with us last week, Robert Hutchinson, partner at Control Risks East Africa. So you can tell us a bit of what your key takeout was as come to the show.
Many thanks, Nyambura. That was a fascinating episode with Hutch. He's taking on risk management for businesses. And when you think of risk management, often we think about the big multinationals. But for me, it's the ordinary businesses, how they navigate day-to-day risk. That's what I found most interesting. And I think some of the tools that we learned, we can start applying them immediately.
Yes, it was quite an interesting an episode, and you can watch, you can catch the previous episode and all our Financial Focus episodes by your favorite podcast channel. You are listening to us at 98.4 Capital FM. You can catch us online at www.capitalfm/listenlive. We value your comments, your feedback, and your questions. You can get to us at WhatsApp line 0701984984 and our socials, Facebook, X at Capital FM Kenya, hashtag Financial Focused. Remember, you can stay informed and actually use information, which is always power, by getting a quick preview of the state of the economy, a report you can get every Monday by emailing info@mentoria.co.ke. And you can also reach out to the same email, info@mentoria.co.ke, to get all your economic insights, data analysis, and forecasts.
Good evening, Nyambura.
Good evening.
It's always a pleasure to be here. For this episode of Financial Focus. I mean, so much has been happening in the global markets. In Kenya. I mean, last week you saw the dollar exchanging at 138.
Who would have thought?
On Friday.
Who would have thought?
You know, that caught me off guard. And everybody was asking, how, you know, what's
what happened? You know, just the same way I keep telling you, Ken, that day,
right?
It's like something had hit. Everything just happened within a day. I still don't understand. There's something that somebody somewhere is not telling us. But talking about markets and commodities, I can tell you the markets are now all up. And we were discussing that last week. The markets were all very jittery. And there is definitely a reason. The bonds are up. In terms of the metals, oil is still showing a downward trend. Gold is also down. So what is happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think the key thing has been the inflation numbers that came out, because that's what's driving sentiments.
Right.
And just a few hours ago, the U.S. inflation numbers came out, and we saw inflation ticking up to 3.2%. Obviously, that caught some people off guard,
right.
But that was largely driven by things such as shelter, gas, per se. Although we did see the core inflation coming down. Mm-hmm. Core inflation is when you strip out some of the more volatile elements. Mm-hmm. So I think markets are digesting. As I said, this is very fresh news. It literally just came out a few hours ago, and this is what will dominate both American markets and our European and the Asian markets. So obviously this is a precursor to next week's Fed's meeting in terms of what will happen. Obviously, I don't think next week we'll see any significant change, but a lot of people are now starting to price in when the next rate cut will be. Probably June, probably in the second half of this year.
Yeah.
And that is really now what's affecting the stock market today.
Okay. You know, gold is down. And they say low interest rates help keep the gold prices, and they reduce the opportunity cost to non-yielding other investments. So what is leading Why is gold down as well?
Well, I mean, if the expectation that the Fed will maintain interest rates high makes it a good story for the dollar.
Right.
Because investors are always are chasing yield. Now, if the dollar strengthens, then the demand for gold actually recedes. So that tells you the demand actually, the 2180 price point might actually find sort of like a bit of movement there. So it tells us that the strong dollar rally will continue as long as the Fed maintains high interest rates. And that also has an impact on our outlook as a shilling.
Right.
Because we're expecting, the narrative we've been giving is, if the Fed cuts interest rates, then we'll get a lot of dollars coming to the local economy and our shilling will strengthen as it has been. But if the Fed next week says interest rates will continue remaining high, obviously gold and all other alternative assets sort of lose that appeal.
Interesting. One thing I can tell you is on the constant rise, and we also discussed it last week, is the Bitcoin. And because I am a diligent student, Ken, I went and did a bit of my homework
all right.
to find out why the Bitcoin is on a sudden rise. And it turns out that the SEC approved 11 organizations, organizations to launch the spot Bitcoin EFTs in January. So it allowed more traditional investors to actually get into the action. And they say the heavy hitters and investors like Fidelity and BlackRock are now selling the group of assets. The other thing that I also noted was it is time for Bitcoin halving. And you educated me that there's so much of Bitcoin. There's a way they limit that.
Correct.
How many they can be mined.
Correct.
So it is also said that it is time. It is done every 4 years. Now, all these things are absolutely new. Just the same way Bitcoin just came. So they're saying it's time for it to be halved, where a piece of code that cuts how much Bitcoin miners get rewarded every 4 years in order to control the amount in circulation. So now we are seeing this is actually also driving up demand and price. Do you think the Kenyan market is now open to this? Have we fully accepted that this is, cryptocurrency is something that we actually know. I remember, I think the previous Governor Njoroge, he had mentioned that Kenya is not ready. Are we ready now? Is it something that we are seeing that is in the markets?
Well, it's definitely becoming more mainstream, as you've said. Uh-huh. The new ETFs that have been onboarded tells us that more and more mainstream players are getting interested. And rightly so. I mean, it's hit an all-time high.
Right.
And investors, nobody wants to miss out on that kind of a very bullish run.
It is.
On the second part, on the supply side, that's a very, very interesting area, because one of the limitations of Bitcoin has always been it has a maximum cap. It has a maximum of about 21 million Bitcoins.
Right.
And one of the questions we economists have always been asking is, what happens when you get to that limit? Because population size is always increasing, meaning there are more and more transactions. So money supply always has to keep expanding as population is expanding. And one of the questions I asked when I wrote an opinion piece on this about 3 years ago is what will happen when we hit that. So it seems they have found a solution saying, okay, yes, it could have a maximum of 21, but you could start halving this 21 and use that halving principle to increase. So it means every 4 years, they'll probably be changing the algorithm and doubling that capacity. So so we'll go from 21 million full bitcoins to 42 million half. And using that algorithm, actually, you could expand it as much as you want. I guess that's the way around that whole capping thing. But it has been a major concern. And that has been, even in the gold, you know, before currency came in, gold used to be the major currency for trade.
Yeah.
And the concerns and the reason that the gold standard could not be maintained was because the gold mines were becoming empty. They were becoming depleted. So there was no gold supply that could keep up with a growing population, and that's really what limit. That's when we moved from commodity currencies to what we call fiat currencies. Fiat currencies mean it's just backed by the law, so you can print as much as you need, and that's why the gold standard was not as sustainable. And this was the same problem that the Bitcoin was going to face. So clearly, they found a way around this, and I guess that sort of answered what had always been a long-standing question.
But my question is, Ken, who's regulating? So is it now a regulated industry, market? Is it now?
I mean, the American seems to be very keen on integrating it. We've seen the big players.
Right.
You've talked about Blackstone, the Morgan Stanleys. Mm. They've been very, very keen on trying to get some of the cryptocurrencies mainstreamed. Maybe not Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You know, I think we always equate crypto and Bitcoin, but
there
are thousands.
Dogecoin.
Exactly. But if you look at one like Ethereum, Ethereum has really been taken up by the mainstream banks. You'd find banks having solutions with Ethereum. So it tells us that that concern of lack of regulation is sort of being addressed. Bitcoin is by far the most popular.
Okay.
And as you say, it's wild, wild west on that. But you know, with the likes of Ethereum coming up and being a bit more open to some regulation, but at the end of the day, the whole notion behind cryptocurrency was to evade a central authority of connecting it. So the question is, how much can it be regulated when that fundamental thesis was to be out of a regulatory framework?
That was what it was created for.
Exactly.
Well, I can tell my very good friend Cedric, it is time for us to be billionaires. You know, we missed it last, is it last year, but 2021, when it took a dip, 2020, and we almost became billionaires. So I think it is our time. One thing I can tell you, the American economy, as we have always been discussing, is very resilient, and their president had something to say about what is happening on that side.
Well, thanks to the American people, America now has the strongest growth, the lowest inflation rate of any major economy in the world. It's because of you. We obviously have more work to do, but we're making real progress, building an economy from the middle out and the bottom up and not the top down.
So, Ken, that was the American president, and he was talking about how the economy in America has remained very resilient, and there's a lot of claps and chest thumping. I hope that was very clear and loud. And he says, you know, there's a lot of work that has been done to the US, to the economy's inflation. But I'm thinking, we also discussed how there was a bit of printing money. So one of the things that happened within the week was that, as you've noted, the key inflation reading was out today. And there's also the Fed Reserve also meant to be having a meeting next week. So what is happening in the US?
I mean, obviously, this is a big political year in the United States. It's one of the events that will define global geopolitics and geoeconomics. And Biden has been on a victory lap, really saying that inflation has been controlled, it's coming down, unemployment is below 4% for the longest stretch in 50 years. So he's saying essentially that this, and this was at the State of the Union address about 3 days ago, that really this is the greatest comeback story America has ever told. Obviously, the debates will be coming up with the Republicans, and that will really be put under the microscope. But it's true, inflation has come down, as we've reported earlier. Yes, today's numbers were sort of misnomer.
Yeah.
But the general trend, if you compare this time last year, when it was at 9%, now it's at 3%. It has come down. Unemployment has come down. So it's a time when obviously politics and economics starts blending together, and Biden will be hoping, and they're very clear to use the word Team Biden to show that it's a team. We'll try to work on the economy, because it has been a very tough time, right, economically speaking, for many households. So I expect this should be the rhetoric for the next, well into November.
Right. Ken, one thing that I was keen to note is he talks about a middle up, bottom up also kind of economy. So at least we can say there's one place where bottom up is actually working. And I think, as we've always discussed, how they measure their inflation is it is more detailed. But I think when we look at Kenya, we see, and we keep noting, there's a difference between how inflation is going to be measured on that side and how inflation is also being measured on our side. And you had some few policy prescriptions as an economist. What do the U.S. actually do to ensure that the numbers, even when there's a lot of chest thumping, they can actually say this bottom-up equation is actually working, and it is working to the extent that it is working for the people?
That's a very powerful question, Nyambura. And I'd say first it starts with how we calculate inflation. There is no single economic variable that defines more of economic policy than inflation. So it's extremely important that we get the inflation numbers correct. And that's what you find in the US, in the UK, they're constantly changing it, updating it, both core and both headline. So I think the first policy prescriptions would be to look at key things such as rent. You see, like in American inflation, they have what is called rent and OER. Mm-hmm. OER is owner's equivalent rent. So this looks at, you know, somebody who owns his own house, but asks how much, if hypothetically, if they were renting it, what would be the market value for that rent?
Okay.
So it really captures that. And the real estate market really captures it. If you look at areas such as gas and fuel, it has a very, very significant, in fact, the key drivers in the latest inflation drivers were because from shelter and gas, but also looked at things such as airfare, tickets, motor vehicle insurance.
Right.
So very rich palette of indicators. I think the challenge we might have in Kenya is we update the numbers not very frequently.
Okay.
It's done almost once a decade.
Oh.
So basically, they have what is called the household survey,
yes,
which is conducted every 10 years. And it's a very expensive survey.
Mm.
And I guess that's why it's done very rarely.
Yeah.
And based on that survey is when they'll be able to recalibrate how inflation is controlled. But, you know,
10 years is a very long time, Ken.
I mean, items, you know, it's only very recently, I think it's only 2 years ago, that they removed things such as VHS, cassettes, you know, very old things.
Right.
Mobile money was introduced. So I think the frequency, and some people have always said, why can't we use the internet?
Mm-hmm.
Why can't you have people writing Python code that is going on online websites, looking at prices in the online, because most of these big retailers have an online presence.
Yes.
So if you have a good coder, you can actually write code and looks at, you know, the cost of butter now versus the cost of butter last year. And I think that's the excitement that we need to introduce into our monetary policy, into our economic planning, really keeping up with the basket that represents the 21st century consumer. Let me put that. Another policy prescription is, let's not just not look at inflation.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things the US has is what's called the Beige Book.
Uh-huh.
This is sort of a survey that talks to people all across the countries, from farmers to real estate players to media professionals, and comes up with an aggregate of what are ordinary people who are deep in the economy, what are they saying? And this Beige Book normally comes 2 weeks before the Fed meets.
Okay.
And it's a very, very useful book. And it's not just talking to CEOs.
Right.
You know, in Kenya, we have the CEO survey.
Yes.
But it's talking to your mechanics, your restaurant owners, car dealer.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it brings this together, and it's from all parts of the country. So you get much richer
data,
anecdotes that really inform policy. So I think that's another very rich way of making sure that policy is really speaking to, you know, what they call Joe the Plumber. That really is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is fantastic. Is it a beige book?
It actually used to be a red book.
Yeah.
Yeah, until the 1980s.
And
it used to be an internal document for the Fed. So it was never released.
Okay.
Then in 1980, they said, let's make it a public document. Let's soften the color. I think red was considered too
danger,
alarmist.
Yes.
It's danger.
Yes.
And let's make it softer. So I think beige was taken.
Okay.
And for the last 40 years.
It is the beige.
Exactly. And it was not meant to be used for trading purposes because a lot of people thought of it as a document that would predict what the Fed will do. And they didn't want that.
Okay.
And they said, this is just a document that gives you commentary on what ordinary people are saying. So very, very fascinating thing. And I think this, as we think about our policy prescriptions, these are some of, you know, you talk about consumer sentiments.
Yes.
What are people saying? These are the things that capture consumer sentiments and tell you in a very real-time way, are people happy or are people unhappy? And you're able to make the right policies very, very quickly on.
And as you say, how rich this data is, you know, we are in a data world where information is actually power. So I'm thinking, as you're saying, how detailed this data is, it can actually be used for so many marketing purposes and in very many industries, because now that actually gives you, and that is the one thing everybody's always looking at, how many people are you reaching? So I think if at all the Fed wanted to diversify their income, this is data they can actually be selling, because, I mean, I think it takes quite some time to get this information, and it is very factual and it is very true. So, I mean, you can see where I'm going with this. Huh? One thing we have not talked about in terms of the major economies is Europe. And I think all markets were just looking at Tuesday. They were waiting to see what the inflation report was, because the European markets were fascinatingly higher today as the global investors waited for the inflation report. It definitely did come out. But as you were saying, things that economies measure, one thing that I noted is that the UK vinyl sales, one, they're going to be using the vinyl records. It has now been put back into the UK inflation calculations. You know, the way you're saying there are things that people, we need to be measuring. And it has been, I think that it hits the UK vinyl sales. They hit the highest record last year since 1990. And now they have actually brought it back, and they're saying, you know what, this is one of the things that we're actually going to be measuring the inflation, which is interesting, because vinyl, I thought we left that era a very long time ago, Ken. But the other thing that they also put in as 16 products that have been added to the inflation analysis was air fryers and pumpkin seeds. Do you have an air fryer, Ken?
I don't, but I'll certainly be getting one this evening, maybe. But, you know, it speaks to really, and I've said many times, you measure what you treasure. And what the Bank of England is saying is they're seeing a rebound in people buying vinyl. It's the new in thing.
Yeah.
I guess in the fashion world, every 30 years, you always have a change, whether it's in fashion, clothes, or music. There's always some revival, and this is it's there, and it's true, and the numbers do support that. And this is what very good economic planning comes to, collecting data from what people are interacting with.
Right.
If people are starting to buy vinyl, if people have gone back to VHS, then absolutely. So speak to the individual today, consider their basket of goods, and say, this is what tells us what inflation really, really looks like. And that adaptability makes it much easier to make good economic policy. I think sometimes maybe in Kenya, and Kenya has a lot of good data compared to other African countries.
Yeah.
Kenya has been blessed with quite a bit of data that we can play with. You know, when I think of M-Pesa data is data that can really transform our country,
right,
if it's used from monetary policy perspective, because we have a huge usage of M-Pesa. I don't think there's a country that even comes close to Kenya. So the question is, are we taking advantage of these data points to be able to say, this is where, and to be able to objectively say now, this is how the state of the economy is. So if, when you say things are improving, then actually you have a key pointer towards that kind of commitment.
Okay, and it is 7. It is time for our news.
Well, thanks to the American people, America now has the strongest growth, the lowest inflation rate of any major economy in the world. It's because of you. We obviously have more work to do, but we're making real progress, building an economy from the middle out and the bottom up and not the top down.
Yes, 98.4 Capital FM. That is a clip of President Biden telling us exactly why and how America is making it right with the bottom-up economy. 98.4 Capital FM. Yes, it is Tuesday. Financial Forecast with me, Nyambura Ndongo, alongside Ken Gishinga, Chief Economist, Mentoria Economics. Yes, Ken. So, before we went on break, we were discussing how different economies, and you know, we were discussing how the inflation reading came out today and how the Europe economy is actually also looking very good. But Asia, the Asia Pacific markets, they also rose. Funny thing, Japan's corporate inflation figures for January came up higher than expected, and something is also happening in China.
Well, first, a bit of a correction on the European markets. Yes, the stock exchange appears to be picking up, at least in the last 24 hours.
Right.
But the broad economic outlook on the European economy is still very very low.
Mm.
If you look at the latest numbers that came out, outside Denmark,
right,
which appears to be doing well, many of the other European countries are struggling. If you look at Latvia, look at Finland, they're really, really struggling. So you have this collection of European states,
right,
some doing reasonably
good,
well, like Denmark. Denmark is sort of like the star right now.
What are they doing well? They do have a bottom up as well.
You know, there's that famous quote by Shakespeare,
right,
that there's something rotten in the state of Denmark. I think it's Shakespeare's second most famous quote after "to be or not to be." And now we can actually say the reverse. If Shakespeare was alive, you'd say there's something great happening in the state of Denmark. But most European economies, Finland, Latvia, they're really struggling.
Okay.
Many of them are facing recession. Interest rates are very high.
Yeah.
And unemployment is creeping up in most of those countries. So I'd say America still remains an isolated case.
Mm-hmm.
Much of Europe and Asia and China, even as China has its two sessions this week, it's still facing a very, very difficult time in terms of recovery.
All right. In China. So they're having their two sessions, if I got that correct. So what does that, what is that? So what are the two sessions? What is the two sessions in terms of China?
So the two sessions is an annual event that happens every spring.
Right.
And the whole idea of it is to bring all the players in China into agreeing on the way forward.
Okay.
It's where they set the target for Chinese growth, and it's supposed to be actually the real bottom up, because it starts with the equivalent of MCAs coming together, then governors and senators, then all the way till the Politburo. This is the standing committee.
Right.
So it's supposed to be everybody gets a chance to endorse. This year was a bit different.
Wow.
It didn't have a press conference, number one. It's the first time in 30 years that it didn't have a press conference.
This is after the
5 days.
Uh-huh.
Normally, there's a press conference with either the president or the prime minister.
Right.
First of all, the president did not attend.
Hmm.
The prime minister attended, but he didn't accept any press conference. I mean, it was abruptly cancelled. So it tells you that they are very measured in what they want to communicate. Obviously, they do understand that it's not a good time for China, the property market, everything we've talked about on this show, unemployment, especially with fresh graduates, is actually quite low. So obviously they knew that these are the questions the journalists
are going to be asking.
There are actually more journalists than delegates who attended it. And I think that in itself put them on the back foot. So, but still, there was no doubt that Xi Jinping is in charge.
Right.
If you look at the policy document, his name was invoked 16 times.
Okay.
That's actually the most in, I think, the last 10 years.
Wow.
So it tells you he might not physically be there,
but he is
calling all the shots. So obviously analysts and economists will be studying what's coming out of these two sessions. How is China? Will the issue of a stimulus, because there's been issue of, will China issue a stimulus to boost the economy? That's the biggest topic.
Right.
I think that was a bit evaded, but there has been a call for a big stimulus package to try and get consumers back into spending.
Okay. I think Tony Muti would be very intrigued. He'll be very intrigued how that report will go. Right. Okay. Let me tell you one place where things are looking at least much better. Egypt's largest private sector bank is now in Kenya. Okay, it was in Kenya 4 years ago, but it came through a bank, Mayfair. But now I think it is fully into Kenya. And I think towards the end of last year, there was one session where we were discussing the BATA agreement between Egypt and Kenya. And them now actually having a financial institution in Kenya, I'm thinking, is this a way now to create this liquidity since both countries were in dire straits in terms of the dollar and our exports? Do you see that happening?
Well, I think it points to changing sentiments within Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Egypt has largely been affiliated with the Middle East. So you'd find most of its diaspora, its branches would be in Dubai, in Qatar, and such countries. When I lived in Egypt, people didn't know much about Kenya.
Oh.
When I used to introduce myself as a Kenyan, all they would say is chai, good chai. But nowadays, there is a big awareness that sub-Saharan has huge potential.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Egypt is just one of the countries that is starting to appreciate that.
Okay.
And I know our CIB spent quite a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, they even had journalists, Kenyan journalists, going to their Cairo office and had very deep engagement because they're saying, yes, beyond tea, beyond, there's a lot more that. So I think it's part of diversification from Egypt, saying we are in the African continent, we need to be engaging more, but also seeing this opportunity in terms of capital. As you said, people are buying and selling, and banks always tap into trade avenues.
Right.
So I think it's a very strategic move. It's interesting that they bought a bank, and it tells you how banks are now entering the Kenyan market.
Yes.
They used to come sort of as an entity, but nowadays you're seeing them coming, sort of buying existing banks, and I think it's much easier in terms of getting a license, the regulatory framework. So it's very interesting how also a banking network is becoming much more diverse.
Talking about banks' liquidity, we are finally home. So the Exchequer said that the country is in breach of crucial debt sustainability indicators, and this report and the update came up last week. But since we had very limited time, I wanted us to take time and review it today, such that our solvency and liquidity ratios are not looking so good, but in the medium term it's stable. But they were looking at by 2027, the risk of distress is absolutely really high. And you've talked about this so many times, but once again, where does Kenya find itself in terms of its public debt management?
Definitely between a rock and a hard place.
Right.
And the president himself has said this is the number one item that gives him sleepless nights. Out of every 10 shillings collected, 7 shillings is going towards service debt. Only 3 shillings is left for counties, for salaries, for development. And that's why even in the news story about the health ministry, they don't have money to pay interns, because a big chunk
is actually going to be
going to serve his debt. And right. he issued a challenge. He said, we need to flip that at that meeting in Nakuru.
Right.
We need to flip that. And we need to make sure that it's now 3 shillings going to serve his debt and 7 shillings going to do development. And I thought that was fantastic.
Mm.
And I was expecting now the Treasury now to come and now provide a roadmap on how that
how
directive,
that. Mm-hmm.
But we've not, I've not seen any document
right.
that responds to that challenge. I think the president offered a challenge and was expecting Treasury to come up with a challenge and right. say, this is how we will achieve that presidential directive.
Yeah.
If anything, we've seen just more loans sort of coming up. So for me, it makes me wonder to what extent are directives and the economic policy aligned. And I think it is a source of concern because, as you said, if we continue this direction, then issue of debt distress, and there are human costs to this, as I've said in the
mm-hmm.
past. It means contractors will not be paid.
Yeah.
Money for health interns will
Buying
not be found.
The cement itself, everything in terms of what you need to construct that road or that hospital, the Medicare, you can't get all that because there's absolutely no money. And I remember Hutch actually mentioned it where he said you actually have a good policy. Everything on paper is absolutely fantastic. But where that policy is actually being implemented and hitting the road, that is always where the problem is. And hence, the biggest risks. Because you have something, it looks fantastic, but implementation, that is where the problem is at.
You know, Nyambura, yesterday I was involved in a very interesting conversation with some policymakers.
Mm-hmm.
And one particular businessman asked this particular question. Now that Kenya has a very strong relationship with the United States,
mm-hmm.
and we know even the president will be going to Washington in the next 1 or 2 months
mm-hmm.
for a big summit,
right.
why don't you use this opportunity to get cheap financing, pay off this very expensive debt,
mm-hmm.
and be able to now stimulate the country, almost like a Marshall Plan,
yeah.
where you get, you know, talk to American investors, say, we are struggling with debt, we need almost 0% or 1%,
right.
help us get this, let's pay off our very expensive debt,
one.
So that money starts circulating. And I thought
okay.
that was extremely, very interesting. And these are some of the statecraft moves
okay.
that our policymakers need to be thinking of
mm-hmm.
in terms of getting the debt burden and helping now Kenyans actually start hitting the economy running.
How sustainable would that be? Is it actually, I mean, in terms of risk analysis, how would you rate that?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, there was a Marshall Plan
mm-hmm.
in which America dedicated so much money to rebuilding Europe after the World War II.
Oh, right.
And for them, rebuilding Europe made sure that they have an ally in Europe. America also needs an ally in Africa. They have Egypt. They need Kenya to be a strong ally.
Right.
And this would be a very strategic move for the United States. They're saying, if we can help Kenya navigate out of this
mm-hmm.
and have a strong ally, maybe. So I think these are some really good moves that could be made
mm-hmm.
Because if we don't tackle this debt thing, it's just gonna get worse and worse, and it's going to make doing business even harder.
Absolutely harder. One place where I can tell you there is funding is SMEs can now access 7.2 billion in terms of World Bank funded loans. So this is coming through supporting and accessing finance, but only through the financial institutions to SMEs, and the amounts are between 7,000 and 250,000 shillings. And I was reading this story at on our Capital Business website page, and it is saying that there's the World Bank is still having money to fund SMEs because they know that is where probably the economy, literally bottom up, is being pushed. So do you think this is going to give a bit of a reprieve? But remember last week we also discussed and said how now that person, every single person has to have an eTIMS invoice
when they're about to do business. So is this, I remember what Tony said, is this the government giving you the funds because they know they're going to be collecting taxes?
I mean, obviously the SMEs that qualify will benefit from affordable credit. My only fear is that number might be very limited.
Right.
And what happens to the rest of the businesses that have to go through the ordinary way? And I've always said, and this was a challenge with the Hustler Fund too.
Right.
An excellent idea, but it's limited in that nature. And one asks, what about all the others that are not part of this program?
Cannot qualify.
And that. So, and that's what I've always said, and this is where Kibaki got it right.
Mm-hmm.
He said, instead of having these unique funds,
right,
youth funds, women funds, Hustler funds, why don't we just bring total loan cost of credit down broadly so that everybody
can access credit?
Exactly. So you don't have to be part of
whichever financial institution.
Exactly. So you don't have to be part of a World Bank program. You don't have to be part of a Hustler fund. You don't have to be
below 35.
Exactly. It just applies to any business person. Okay. And I think that was a brilliance. And if you look at those days, T-bills were at 1%, 2%. So banks were just could not make money from treasury bills. They had to lend money to your moms and pops,
right?
You know, institutions. And for me, I want to say that is the right thinking. Think about the economy broadly,
right,
and bring interest rates down so that you don't have to be part of some club or some fund and anybody. And that's what really creates a transformation. And I think that's what we need to go back to.
Oh, that is very insightful. And I actually did not know that. Thank you. Now, last item is, you had talked about having a CEO survey, and there was one that was done by PwC. What is the forecast and the foresight our leaders do have? What are we anticipating? What are they anticipating in terms of Kenya and the economy in 2024?
It's a fascinating report, and I think it's an annual report that speaks to the CEO's outlook. And they said 48% of CEOs actually see their revenues growing this year. So less than half of CEOs see their company's revenue.
Oh.
So they have weak expectation of 2024. However, over the next 3 years, that number goes from 48% to 56%. So slightly more. So it tells you there's slightly more optimism in the 3 year mark than in the 1 year mark, which I found was quite interesting.
3 years, 56%. 1 year, 48%. Did the report actually say probably what it is that they're seeing in 3 years that we are not seeing in the 1 year that we are here?
It's very hard to say. Well, I didn't see it in the report, so I had to try and just guesstimate.
Right.
I would say maybe those CEOs are seeing lower interest rates in the long term horizon, and maybe that could make the cost of credit go up. That could be one reason, but there are many other reasons they could be seeing. Yes. So,
did the report highlight? I know we've discussed how the cost of doing business is getting very expensive, in high interest rates, high taxation, the dollar, and if at all you're importing any factors of production, that is definitely going to be affecting how we are going to be doing businesses. Are there any other outlying factors that came in through the report or through the CEO survey?
Well, I didn't see any more than that, but there were other reports that came around the same time, one of which we covered it in our weekly report was the motor vehicles sales. And we saw in January, new sales went down 37%. Compared to December. So month on month, we saw new motor vehicle sales going down 37% on the back of exchange rate issues and high taxation. So at least that tells you, I mean, because the people who are buying new vehicles, not pre-owned new vehicles, you know, that's a segment in the society. And even that segment is starting to feel the heat. So I think, you know, as economists, we try and put together all these all these reports together before coming up with an investment thesis. You're laughing.
No, I'm actually an investment thesis. So this should be telling us where we're meant to be putting our money and the markets that we're meant to be looking into.
Spot on.
So is that our Kenyan beige book? No.
I think we'll have to get a different color for Kenya.
Can we come to the end of our show on this beautiful Tuesday? What parting shot do you have for us today?
Well, I think putting together these reports, now that we are just about to finish Q1, mm-hmm. This is a time when companies are doing their strategies.
Yeah.
We've talked about risk management. Many CEOs have confirmed
that
they don't see significant revenue growth,
mm-hmm.
which means that you have to play defense, at least try and protect
what you have.
So if you're not going to have significant revenue growth, at least try to defend your market share. So we're going to be playing very defensive this year until the market opens up.
And I remember at the beginning of the show when we were looking at the previous CBK survey that also had surveyed the CEOs, I think a few things that came up was talent management, where development actually, where you have the right talent and ensuring that you're maximizing on that. New markets, entrance into new markets. I don't know how that is going to be possible now considering how the geopolitics is playing out. But let's wait and see how that goes. So yeah, we come to the end of our financial forecast, and I hope you have learned a thing or two. For us, we had a guest with us, silent, does not want to talk. A graduate who is, which is having her 1 year. What is it called? What did you call it, Ken?
I believe it's called a gap year.
Gap year. Yeah, and she really wants to either think of doing finance or economics, and she's just been staring at us and listening to us. So thank you. I hope you've learned something. Remember, you can get this and all the information that we are talking about and more in-depth economic insights and data analysis by emailing info@mentoria.co.ke. But you can also listen to this episode and every other episode we've had of Financial Forecast on Capital FM SoundCloud page and anywhere you get your podcast from. For us, for now, it is good evening. But for Capital, we continue with the shows. It is time to get hyped with Wanjera. Good evening.